So take a moment and think about your family. Then think about the foods that mean family to you, the dishes that mark the passing of years. In some ways, we can trace our own human history through the foods that we eat, the spices that we use. Hoppin' John in Arkansas on New Year's, lutefisk in Norway on Christmas, punschki in Poland on Fat Tuesday. The slave trade took so much from African Americans. They lost their names, their families, their land, their possessions, their language, certainly their freedom.
Fortunately, they didn't have to deal with lutefisk.
Have you had it?
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
It's certainly.
It's a tradition, John.
It is a tradition.
There are a few small things that the slaves held on to through that brutal Middle Passage and then the hundreds of years of enslavement. Their memories and their tastes for African cooking.
Mm.
And whether or not you know it, the melons and the spices that came with the slaves have actually shaped American meals and dinner tables ever since. Food historian Jessica Harris joins us now, and she has a new book out called High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America. She joins us in studio. Good
I'm
morning.
Sitting at this table, a picture on the cover of your book.
Isn't that a great picture?
Wouldn't you
so
like to?
Fantastic.
Isn't that a great picture?
Yeah.
I love the picture. It's this wonderful set of African Americans, probably turn of the 20th century, sitting down at a picnic table with, there's a chicken sandwiches.
Pile of sandwiches.
But they're chicken sandwiches, bone in.
Oh, wow.
Bone in. I've been through it with a loop. So bone in. And if you'll notice, it's slightly off center.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that's because on the left, next to the gentleman with the suspenders, was a big old pit bull, and I said, no dog at the table on my book cover.
That's right, so you cropped out the dog.
Well, let me give an example of one of the menus you feature as you're going through the food history here. You talk about a restaurant from Father Divine during the Depression, and here's the menu. Fricasseed chicken, roast duck, boiled beef, spare ribs, fried sausage, lamb stew, liver and bacon, stewed tomatoes, spinach, Brussels sprouts, string beans, asparagus tips, fruit salad, ice cream, and chocolate cake. See, now that's the banquet that I would want to be a part of. But what you really talk about in this book and what fascinates me are these untold stories of names many people have never heard before, who kept, not only brought with them the traditions of their ancestors from the African continent and the foods, but then brought it forward into some of the foods that have become just part of the American landscape.
Well, what happens is, as I wrote, I found that people were just, you know, sort of sitting on my shoulder going, you got to tell my story, you know, and there's all the Stevie Wonder thing, you better tell your story well, because if you lie, it will come to pass.
Well, that's the thing about you. You're like the food griot.
Thank you. You're
like carrying these stories around.
They weigh you down at times, but it's
a great thing.
They're just, you know, there's so many stories, and the thing about particularly African-American food history is if you're talking about the untalkable, I mean, because African-American history in this country, certainly up until the 20th century, is in a certain way kind of tainted, large quotation marks around the word, with enslavement, because mm-hmm. it's something that discomforts us. We're not comfortable talking about it. So particularly when you talk about food history and you talk about rations and you talk about things that were given to people who we think were unable to have control, it's so glorious to me to realize they did have control. They had the power of no, in a certain way. No, I won't eat that. They had the power of, I'm going to make you eat that. They had the power of all of these things that were in their heads, hearts, and hands that they brought with them, really.
And so many things that we now think of as very traditional Southern dishes were actually slave dishes.
Well, in many ways, yeah. I mean, you know, my whole thing is think about who was doing the cooking. Although that was another kind of, you know, one of those sort of things that those light bulbs that go off in your head that go, whoa, wait a minute, I didn't know that.
Well, you got all these marks in the book.
Oh, I got 15 million things marked here. We could talk for 5 hours.
Well, tell us some stories about maybe James Hemings. I mean, we know
his sister,
Sally.
We know his sister, but we don't necessarily know James. Well, James was
Thomas Jefferson's girlfriend.
Yeah. And this is the real deep part, the half-sister of Thomas Jefferson's wife,
which kind of complicates it a little bit more.
But one of the things that, or we think that, you know, everything is DNA, you know, whatever.
Well, the people in the Jefferson family
That would be a different sort of story. Yeah. But the thing is that Sally's brother, James, was a cook and cooked in the kitchens at Monticello and apparently had a great talent for it. And on July 5th, 1784, at Jefferson's request, boarded a ship to go to France, where Jefferson was the ambassadeur plénipotentiaire to the court of Louis XVI. And so he gets to be in France at a crucial time in French history, but he equally gets to be in France at a crucial time in French culinary history. Restaurants, we think of, you know, restaurants as having existed forever, but the actual restaurant as we now know it comes, well, the word restaurant comes from restaurer, to restore oneself, and that word enters the lexicon in 1782.
When James Hemings was there.
Well, just before James Hemings gets there.
But learning from these chefs in Paris.
Well, even more importantly, what happens is these restaurants were the beginning of the democratization, if you will, of food. Prior to that, it was the food of the royals or the food of the peasants and nothing sort of in the middle ground. There were inns, auberges, there were taverns, there were coffee houses. But these restaurants began to democratize food. It began to be a place that people could go and eat, people who weren't necessarily of the blood or of the aristocracy.
And Hemings led the way on that in the United States?
Well, Hemings was in France at that point in time, certainly would have known about it, cooked in the kitchens of the houses of the royals, saw all of this stuff happening.
Wait, one moment, really quickly.
Go ahead.
James Hemings was in France, where he was technically a free man.
Yeah.
But he came back to the States with
Thomas
Jefferson.
There you go. No one can figure it out. Mm. It has been posited that he saw this developing relationship with his sister and wanted to come back and kind of keep his eye on it. I don't think people know. But he also, while he was in France, petitioned Jefferson for wages, and Jefferson paid him.
Well, the food must have been really, really
good.
His
food was really, really good. But, I mean, one of the things that I am fascinated by, it's one of those things that I'm worrying in my brain, is who was this man? What was he thinking? What was in his head? I've tried to walk some of the paths that he might have walked in France, in Paris, Philadelphia as well. But this man is so talented that he ends up actually in an apprenticeship, you know, what the French call stage, these little sort of short apprenticeships, to the kitchen of the Prince de Condé, a French prince of the blood. You don't get much higher on the French culinary scale than that. So he comes back. He brings all of this to Jefferson's table. He ultimately is returns to the United States, enslaved, and then petitions Jefferson for his freedom.
That's one of the many incredible stories in Jessica Harris's new book, High on the Hog, including a number of them about Lena Richard is fascinating.
Yeah, Lena Richard is fun.
Yeah, had her television program in many years before Julia Child,
right,
cooking
exactly.
On
the 40s,
on TV.
Late 40s, and cooking on TV in New Orleans.
The new book, as I said, called High on the Hog, A Culinary Journey from Africa to America. Jessica Harris, thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thank you so much.
Since WNYC's first broadcast in 1924, we've been dedicated to creating the kind of content we know the world needs. Since then, New York Public Radio's rigorous journalism has gone on to win a Peabody Award and a DuPont Columbia Award, among others. In addition to this award-winning reporting, your sponsorship also supports inspiring storytelling and extraordinary music that is free and accessible to all. To get in touch and find out more, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.